Good afternoon and welcome to the Greater IBM Connections webinar series on Meet the Experts. And today we are pleased to invite you to participate in a conversation with Peter Kirsten about a study from the IBV, which is the IBM Institute for Business Value. Now, that is a very special and elite group of consultants that gather information from customers, business partners, academia, and all kinds of influencers on topics that are relevant to our business and business at large. Today's topic is the new voice of the CIO, and it's a 2009 global CIO study. It's the very, very first time IBM has conducted such a study. IBM talked to more than 2,500 CIOs from over 75 countries, 15 industries, exploring a number of issues facing CIOs in these industries and in these countries. The call will last 1 hour. Peter will present for approximately 45 minutes. And again, at the end of this 45-minute period, he will take your questions, and that will be monitored by the operator and James Kandura, who's working with Peter. The title of the call is A New Voice of the CIO. And let me give you a little bit of background about Peter. Peter is the vice president and partner and is a global leader of the Institute for Business Value at IBM, which we term the IBV. The IBV is IBM's sort of think tank. It's a consulting organization, and it's the equivalent of IBM's research and development organization in hardware and software. It's the IBV that's responsible for the development of innovative and compelling long- and short-term points of view on a wide variety of leading industries and key functional areas. Peter leads a team of about 60 top consulting experts from around the world in all industries and functional domains. In addition to leading this new CIO study, Peter's also the global leader of the largest ever CEO study in the world. That's called the Enterprise of the Future, and it was launched by Sam Palmisano, the CEO of IBM, in May 2008, and has been received with widespread recognition by a lot of the media and industry experts. So Peter Kirsten is Vice President and Partner of the IBM Institute for Business Value. And everybody, welcome Peter Kirsten, Vice President and Partner of the IBM Institute for Business Value.
Thank you very much, Flor, and welcome everybody here in the call. I didn't know that people could figure out so many things about myself. My background, for those of you who don't know, that is not so much with IBM, but more in consulting. I worked in business initially in venture capital and in fast moving consumer goods, did an MBA at IMD in Lausanne, and then joined the Boston Consulting Group, where I had the first 8 years in my consulting careers. Then I joined PricewaterhouseCoopers as a partner to run strategy and change in Europe, Middle East, and Africa. And that's how I became an IBMer. I'm now a proud IBMer for over 7 years, and since the last 2 years, I'm leading the IBM Institute for Business Value, the think tank, as mentioned. In the Institute, we research what's happening in all kinds of industries around the world, and we publish that. We do that to educate ourselves, also to demonstrate our commitment to these industries, and to start conversation with clients. One thing that we are uniquely doing that nobody in the industry or in academia is doing is we do these massive in-office studies of professions. You know, what are CEOs thinking? What are CFOs talking about? And things like that. We've done a number of them. Flor was mentioning that. We've done 3 CEO studies, 2 CFO studies, Chief Human Capital Officer study, and a Chief Supply Chain Officer study. But we've never done a CIO study. So it's amazing to position ourselves, to educate ourselves, to get those contacts. Of course, there are relational elements in that as well. And so now that we've launched a CIO study, we were eager to see how the uptake would be. The response rate on an invite to a CEO is typically 1 in 3. We were surprised to learn that, pleased, I should say, a little bit surprised and very much pleased, that the response rate on CIOs that were invited to participate in the study was 80%. And so where we plan to do something like 1,000 interviews in the first part of this year and first 4 months, we did a total of over 2,500 interviews. So that was an overwhelming result and gives us a lot of data. So So maybe if we can move to slide one, or the next slide, I should say, you can see, the sample. You see we are well represented all over the world, in particular also in rapidly developing markets, that we cover all the sectors, including public, and that we are not exclusively interviewing CIOs of large or small organizations that have very nice, representation across the whole sample size of organizations and sizes, including about 50% of respondents coming from mid-sized organizations with between 1,000 and 10,000 employees. So with such a massive sample data, you really can cut it many ways. We had a team of 7 people from India flying into the U.S. They had prepared the work, and we had 1,000 charts on the wall with 3 fellows, with all kinds of other people. We had a total team of 12 pretty brilliant people analyzing the data. We looked at it by industry, by region, by tenure of CIO. But the thing that really struck us was when we made the analysis by performance of organization. Performance as defined as profit growth before tax in the 2004-2007 period. So 4 years, and then industry by industry. So we're basically looking which companies in an industry, let's say the pharma industry, do better than most, which do average, and which do not as good as most. And so then we associate the results and the responses of the CIOs with the kind of organization they represent. We did not assess, is this a good or bad CIO? For that, we would have to look in the performance sheet or do a personal assessment, which was not appropriate. So, but we can see, is the CIO sitting in a very healthy, fast-growing, profitable, rich environment, or in a not-so-fast-growing, under-stress environment and things like that? And that's where we saw the main differences. So if we can move to next slide. The first thing we saw for the overall sample is that by now, CIOs are spending a considerable amount of time outside of the direct IT activities. That is, they work with a larger organization with innovation, with implementing new technologies, and also with managing non-technological issues for which they're often invited and appreciated. They're also much more actively engaged in the high successful CIOs, the CIOs, I should say, of high growth organizations in setting the strategy, making sure that whole organizations are becoming flexible and change ready, and in solving real non-IT business problems. So we see the population at large moving outside of the IT domain into the more general business domain, profiling themselves. They're picking up information that is fruitful and useful and insightful for the IT organization. However, as I said, we did discriminate between the CIOs in high-growth and low-growth organizations, which, to keep it short, we call high-growth and low-growth CIOs. So on the next slide, you'll see what we found there. We found those high-growth CIOs to be different in 3 respects. One, they're much more active in innovation, not only IT innovation, but driving widespread innovation in the organization. They're passionate about finance things, about ROI, not ROI of IT in terms of, does my server work well, but, is it business getting value out of the IT investment? So you'll hear them talk about stock levels, customer retention, supply chain management, credit ratings and things like that. Talk business language and understand what it is that makes a business tick. And thirdly, they're very buddy-buddy to their peers in the business unit or divisional or corporate organization. They're respected as peers, not seen to be just IT managers or CIOs, but seen to be, full-fledged fellow business leaders. Now, in order to be good in these roles, looking at those high-growth versus low-growth, sectors, we've uncovered the 6 roles have to be very good in order to outperform. And we call them pairs of roles, as they come in a pair, as you can see in the diagram on this slide, around making innovation real, a pair around raising the ROI of IT, and a pair around expanding business impact. So let's move to the next slide, and this is where you see our icon, our logo, 2 faces. You have to be 2 things, do 2 things very well in order to make innovation real. At the one end side, as you can see, you have to be an insightful visionary, whereas at the same time, you also have to be an able pragmatist to make sure that what is envisioned is actually happening in real life. So moving to the next slide, these insightful visionaries, the first trait of making innovation real, the first rule that you have, is it's not about what you can do with IT, but you are basically a chief innovation officer. You drive the discussion, you facilitate the discussion, you make sure it's a business discussion. So you involve all kinds of people from business, and as you can see on the slides, and you'll see many of these kind of graphs, the dark bar is referencing to the high-growth CIOs, and the light blue bar is referencing to the low-growth CIOs. So you see those high-growth CIOs do much more of that. They, you know, are deeply involved with the business every day. And if we advance the slides, then you see at the bottom of the slides that those high-growth CIOs actively, proactively reach out to the business to co-create and champion that innovation much more often. As a result of which, at the right-hand side in the bottom here, you see that they are much more often a member of the most senior management team. Now, talking about innovation, you may wonder, what kind of innovation are they talking about? Quite frankly, we want to know that too. So one of the questions we had is we had 20 emerging technologies, and we asked CIOs, which of those technologies would you pick to advance the competitiveness of your organization? And they could pick as many as they liked. They could pick all 20 or 3 or 5, whichever number they wanted. And the number one picked item by those CIOs was business intelligence analytics. You know, the most important list on enhancing competitiveness for organizations picked by CIOs. And as you can see, both high-growth and low-growth organizations have said this is the number one. By the way, we also have 17 industry cuts, and there's some variation by industry, but by and large, this is the number one factor. Business intelligence analytics always ends up in the top three. Number two is virtualization, and three is risk management. If you look at all these things, you'll see most of them are closely business-related and not pure IT plays. The other thing you see in this chart is that the dark blue bars always stick out more than the light blue bars, illustrating the fact that high-growth CIOs pick more items than low-growth CIOs. They either have more money, more energy, more vision, or what have you, but they are busy with many more things at the same time to drive innovation in their organization than low-growth CIOs. So if you advance the slides, you'll see that the first role that you have to have as a successful CIO in the outperforming organization is you have to be an insights visionary. And another click will learn us that you also have to be an able pragmatist. So let's go there on the next slides. The able pragmatist is a person who gets things done. Now, the first question is, what does your management expect you to do? And this is what you see at the top of the slide. You see that those high-growth CIOs are expected to spend more time to enable the business and corporate vision than the low-growth CIOs, who are expected to spend more time as a core technology service provider. And that's a catch-22. That's a difficult position to be in. If you're in this low-growth organization, where management says, go away, just do your, you know, technology stuff. Don't bother me with, you know, all the other things. Then you have to step up the plate. You have to join the party. You have to make yourself famous. And one way that we see CIOs doing that is they do indeed that. They invite themselves to sales meetings, to logistics meetings, to finance meetings, just to listen in, just to understand what the needs of the users are. And the users not always are capable or, you know, experienced or, you know, good in articulating their needs. But if you are in their meetings, you will learn that. Now, one thing that we see CIOs doing more in high-growth organizations and low-growth organizations to stimulate innovation and new things happening is they put in all kinds of collaboration and partnering technologies, be that, you know, webcast and, you know, messaging, same-time messaging and things like that. But they do that strictly more in their own organization and in the organization as a whole. They also use third-party businesses and, you know, business IT services more often. They're much more picky about things that they want to do themselves. These are things where they want to be best in class, discriminate themselves, you know, harvest knowledge and technology. But the other things, they're very happy to share with others in shared service organizations, through outsourcing, maybe even in working with competitors together. So in reflection on the next slides, we in conversation we have with CIOs, we try to consolidate all that in a few questions. So the first question that you see here is, which initiative will you take this Monday that will fundamentally enhance the perception of the CIO as a key innovator? On the next slides, you see the summary of this. And for some people, this is a handy slide to print off and maybe have with you because it's a summary of summaries. We have three of those slides, and they kind of, you know, give you in a snapshot view what the key conclusions are without the facts. So that's the first goal of a CIO to be about innovation, to make that innovation real by being an insightful visionary, enable practices. So with that, let's move on to the second primary goal of those high-performing organization CIOs, which is they want to raise the ROI of IT. And when I recently presented that to a set of analysts, they say, Peter, you made a spelling mistake. It should be ROI of IT. I said, but that's what it is. It's ROI. No. ROI. What do you mean ROI? Return on yesterday. I like that. And I would have probably changed it if I would have had that idea before. Because today is very much about, how to make more money of the things you've already done. And there are two ways of doing that. One, by being a seven value creator. And two, by being a relentless cost cutter. So let's look at these two arguments. Next slide. At the top of the slide, you see that those savvy value creators, leading-edge organization CIOs, much more often proactively craft data into actionable information. They're not waiting for the organization to come to them and say, can you help me with this, or I'd like to have this data. No, they, by understanding the functions as argued before, by understanding what a sales leader needs to know, by having deep insights into how logistical organizations work, they can then spontaneously provide suggestions, analysis that are worthwhile for that part of the organization. Also, at the bottom of the slide, next slide, please, you see that those high-growth CIOs are much more savvy in expectations around channel management. They are, gung-ho about that new products, will have to be stimulated through new channels and that these channels are constantly changing. Now it's Facebook and YouTube. Who knows, and Twitter, who knows what it's going to be next year? So they're all over that, much more actively than their low-growth peers. Secondly, they anticipate much greater levels of integration and transparency with customers. They know that customers want to know when something is coming. If I order a book, I'm based in Europe, if I order a book with Amazon.com, and I could choose between having it shipped by UPS or DHL, and UPS would provide me tracking information, I would go for UPS. Because then I know when the book is coming, whether it's stuck, whether there's a problem, when I can expect it. That transparency is pervasive, and it's a deep need, and you see it everywhere in society. The more people can know about their process, whether that's ordering a car, being in B2B, knowing when your bill is going to be paid, so ideally your bank tells you, somebody's given me an instruction to pay you, then the money is coming. But that sometimes takes a day or two, but at least the wire has been sent and things like that. Transparency is a very operative word for these high-growth organizations. The next slide, you see that, one of the roles is being a set of value creator, but if you, go to the next iteration of that slide, you see you also have to be a relentless cost cutter. Let's move to that slide number 16 here, where you see that both high-growth and low-growth organizations spend about 14% of their time, that's a good 9 to 12 hours a week, of CIOs purely on cost cutting. No difference between high growth and low growth there. They need that these times, and generally they say they did that in the past as well. Budgets are not easily extended, so you have to work the budget harder. You have to cut costs to pay for your next level of innovation or investment, things like that. The bottom of this slide of the next click, you see that they expect to find that money in two areas predominantly. One, centralized infrastructures, both again, high growth and low growth organizations, and secondly, by standardizing business processes. I should caution here that it's not all business processes, but those that are not crucial for the organization, or crucial, not discriminating, I should say, not differentiating for the organization. So that they say, we're going to be the same as the rest of the industry. But they always will pick two or three or four things where they want to be totally unique and different from the organization, which they will then not standardize so that they can be truly very good in those chosen domains. So on the next slide, you see that raising the ROI of IT, you do by, at the one hand side, understanding what the business needs and then providing that proactively, while at the same time, finding money to make the necessary investments in innovations and all the things you need to do by relentless cost cutting. And as we've just seen, that's currently particularly strong in centralized infrastructures and harmonizing business processes. Next slide is again the summary slide that you can use for reference purposes, highlighting the three key points around value creation and relentless cost cutting. So with that, let's move to the next slide, which is about expanding business impact. making sure that the business listens to you and that you listen to the business. One CIO that we interviewed, it's the CIO of, let me think of Avon Cosmetics. He said, I look at my IT organization in two ways. You know, some of my IT people are the marketeers, and the others are the manufacturers, and they're very different animals. The marketeers listen to the organization and find out what they need, and the manufacturers, of course, make sure that what needs to be done is being done. So here again, you see that the expanding business impact is done through being a collaborative business leader, working with the business, being recognized as a true leader, the one end side, and being an inspiring IT manager at the other end side. So let's look at that, you know, collaborative business leader thing. And here we see that those high-growth CIOs that are so much about innovation and set of value creation and then get these things done are highly valued by their senior executives. We ask, you know, what ranking would your senior management give you and your technology team for the contribution to the business overall? Is it very high, high, medium, low, or very low? And in 78% of the cases in high-growth organizations, this was a high or very high, whereas that's only 53% of low-growth organizations. A clear demonstration that the rest of the management team appreciates the kind of innovative, proactive behavior of CIOs. And on the next tab, you see in the bottom of this slide here that they're then invited to help create business strategies, present those business strategies more often than the low-growth peers, and actually, at the bottom here, you see that they are even more often a member of the most senior management team that, you know, makes decisions and things like that. So the behavior, the things you do really matter in terms of getting accepted, getting input, and driving your organization. And we see the CIO then really as a business leader that gives direction to the IT but doesn't manage the IT function. Of course, he's responsible or she's responsible for that function, but it's more like injecting what do we need to do, setting priorities, picking the right people to lead the organization, not to be a deep-down technologist. On the next slide, you see that, you know, this is a fifth role, but with one more click, you see you also have to be an inspiring IT manager, because if you're the head of the IT organization, you better have people that believe that you are their hero. And for that, we figured out that the CIOs use the Center of Excellence model. And if they know what they in their industry want to be known for, where their IT organization is going to be best, maybe it's customer analysis, maybe it's supply chain management, maybe it is data warehousing, whatever that may be, you want to be best in business. So you want to have people from your organization join that part of the team, the center of excellence, to be excellent in that. You maybe want to hire experts from outside the organization to join that team to become even better. But then the rest of the things, you don't need that much. You can outsource shared service, partner, or things like that, so that you can really focus on those things. And guess what? That makes you better in those things where you are focusing, one, but also, and it will attract talent, but also it gets you recognition and differentiation, both within your organization as well as its clients. Now, that all has to be in the context of data, and that's the bottom part of this slide next to it here, where we've seen that high-growth CIOs do much more to help users provide the right information at the right time in a reliable and secure fashion. The analogy here is Google, where one CIO said, I want to be, for my organization, what Google is for the world, provide instant information in the way people want it in a reliable and secure way. And you can see that, you know, awareness is higher with high-growth CIOs than with low-growth CIOs. So with a few more clicks, we complete the next page, which shows the bottom question here. What two initiatives, if you're a CIO, will you kick off next month to one, increase the interest the business has in what IT can bring to you, and two, further enhance the business skills of the IT organization. One trick that we've learned from CEOs that they apply often is they would, you know, exchange youngsters, people with 5 to maybe 6 or 7 or 8 years experience in their part of the organization, for instance, in the IT organization, exchange such talent, the best people they have, painful as that may be, with the sales, the marketing, the HR, the production organization for a 3-month period, and get in exchange a tenant from their organization back in the IT organization. And this is very good because it teaches the IT people what's going on in the business, and it tells the business people what IT can do for them. Very fruitful and you know, serving, you know, killing two you know, flies with one stone, or whatever, you know, that expression is. I'm sorry for that. So you can really, you know, have that impact in the organization by working with a business and not be, you know, too deep into technology, because there are others who are much more talented, who can concentrate in sense of excellence, who can do that very well. Once more, a bonus slide is the summary slides here on page 25, which, you know, depicts the key attributes of those high-growth CIOs. And page 27 then gives you that what we call a killer slide, the one slide that summarizes all. This is, in the middle, the primary goals of contemporary high-growth CIOs. They're all about making innovation real, not only IT innovation, they facilitate innovation in the organization. So they're as much the chief innovation officer as they are the chief information officer. They have a deep understanding of the business metrics, and they gear their organization towards helping advance those business metrics. And thirdly, they're buddy-buddy. They're appreciated peers by the rest of their business. On page 28, next page, you see that that all has to be put into context. And we thought about that too. And there's a nice booklet, which, by the way, you can order over the web, and it'll be mailed to you, and you'll typically have it in 1 or 2 days. 60-page square booklets in our series of CXO studies. And we have a whole chapter on this, because every situation is unique. And on slide 29, you see that the most effective CIOs take the whole range of possible influences in, you know, determining what am I going to do, where am I going to set my priorities. And they're influenced by, of course, macroeconomic factors, regional factors, and industry characteristics. But as much as that, they're also influenced by their own organization. What's the history of the role of the CIO? How powerful are you? Who are your bosses? Who are your peers? How have you been, you know, treated? How are you treating them in these kinds of things? And of course, you know, the key factor of personal aspirations. On page 30, the next page, you see which aspects weigh in the most heavily for CIOs, and you see that the number one factor today, not surprisingly, is that many of them expect a major change in the business model. Just think of the music industry, how much that has changed, and think of what's happening in, you know, social networking, how that changes behavior and creates almost instantaneously new industries that didn't exist 3 or 4 years ago. Think about what BlackBerry has done to the, you know, the immediate messaging industry and things like that. While they also fear, you know, budgets in low-growth organizations more so, by the way, than in high-growth organizations, although that's still a healthy 40% of, you know, CEOs being, you know, very concerned about that in high-growth organizations. So we have developed a tool that hopefully will help CEOs quickly get the message and measure themselves. And you'll find it on page 32. Here you see a spiderweb diagram with 6 axes. On the top, you'll find the key factor for making innovation real, which is being an insightful visionary. Well, at 6 o'clock at the bottom, you see the counterpart of that, that you also have to be enabled practices. At 2 o'clock, you see that in order to raise the ROI of IT, you have to be a several value creator. Well, you also have to be a relentless cost cutter at 8 o'clock. And finally, to increase business impact, you have to be a collaborative business leader, the one inside, while you inspire your own IT organization. Now, on this particular slide, you see this orange line. And the orange line is the average response of the 800 CIOs that were representing lower growth organizations in their industry. And you see that they're very strong in being an inspiring IT manager, but they're actually weak in each of the other aspects. And one more click will reveal a green line. And the green line is the line of the high-growth CIOs. And it's almost diametrically opposed to what the high-growth CIOs, low-growth CIOs are. They're actually not very strong in being an inspiring IT manager, just making sure the right priority is set, the right people are appointed, the right center of excellence are there, and then they work with the business to, you know, create that innovation as an insightful visionary, to understand where the next layer of competitiveness for that organization is going to be by being a self-evaluator creator, and by being a great person to have on a team with good ideas and a constructive attitude and a, you know, can-do mentality as a collaborative business leader. Well, they're also able practices. Both high-growth and low-growth CIOs, as mentioned before, are equally strong in being a limitless cost cutter, with little difference there. So one more thing we did in the study is we looked at a total of 25,000 quotes, and we took those high-growth CIO quotes and grouped them according to these various principles to find out what is it that they do differently. And the, you know, condensed wisdom of that you'll find on the next few pages, and I'll take you through that, so not with the aim of spending time now, but just to let you know that there is a wisdom. It's in the booklet. You can also go to the web, and we'll be publishing additional papers on that. You know, what makes a CEO an insightful visionary? And just as an example here, you know, they would push business and technology integration. These things have to come together. As mentioned before, they truly champion innovation, not only IT, but also non-IT innovation. And if it's not there yet, if there's no innovation committee or innovation evenings or innovation events, they are the ones to organize that. And they try to extend the influence of the CIO just by doing other things. And by doing other things, being in business committees or green committees or whatever, you know, they get more exposure, they get more recognition, they get more contacts. So in a similar fashion, we have insights around able pragmatists on the next slide on, you know, how to stretch yourself to become a more savvy value creator or a better relentless cost cutter. And the next slide, you'll see that, you know, what you need to do or could do in order to be a more collaborative vision leader or a more inspiring IT manager. So this then would depict the wisdom as we have gathered together from the 2,500 interviews. And the aim of this is, one, to sketch a much richer picture of CIOs than what is commonly believed to be, you know, a business and IT person. No, it's somebody about innovation, about value creation, about working with the business, about getting things done, about minding the costs, and of course also about leading the IT organization. So we want to have a much wider discussion. We presented it now to, I think, over 100 analysts, and quite frankly, we've not had a word of critique yet. Somebody that says this is not right, or in general, actually without exception, I can say analysts have commented to us that they loved that this was done. Some of them said, we should have done this. Why haven't we done this? You know, how come that, you know, while IBM was demonstrating they were doing that with CEOs that we saw coming, we haven't done it ourselves. One of the reasons is, you know, 10,500 is a very big number, and we do it in a high-quality way because we've done live interviews in office, and that is almost unaffordable for any other organization, let alone that they would have that many contacts in this domain and things like that. So we want to expand the profile of CIOs. We want to have a platform for discussion so that we can in the future refer to CIOs as those innovators or as those value creators and things like that. We want to educate ourselves. We also want to educate those CIOs that say, hey, I want to take this further. I want to talk with my CFO or CEO in my organization about this, in which case, you know, IBMers will gladly accompany them and organize workshops for them and with them. Just to advance the discussion and to raise the profile of CIOs. So with that, I would like to compliment this part of the presentation and open the floor for any comments or questions people may have. Let me make one final comment. There's much more material. There's actually a very rich website, which you can easily find in www.ibm.com. Just type in CIO and you'll find it, and or Voice of the CIO, to be precise. And we'll have interviews with CIOs, all kinds of tools. You can even do the interview yourself, answer the same questions, and then have your own spider web. So with that, let's open the floor for any questions.
Hi, thank you so much, Peter. This is very insightful. My question is, what was the biggest surprise element that you found out of this?
So there were surprises and there were comforting things. One thing which was a surprise and a comfort at the same time is the fact that CEOs picked that business analytics as the number one priority for future competitiveness. We've just launched that service as IBM in February. The question was already made. The questionnaire was made in October, so we did not know this was coming on. But it was very nice that, you know, what we are offering to the world and how we're, you know, working with our scientists and analysts and statisticians and consultants in, you know, our business analytics domain is now appreciated by the market as well. The other surprise is that there's so much difference between high growth and low growth CIOs, in particular around the fact that in low growth organizations, they almost force their CIOs to be, you know, in the technical domain, whereas in high-growth organizations, you see that they are allowed more freedom and that they bring much more value, you know. And the spider web is probably the best depiction. You know, as I said, I have killer slides. One killer slide is this, you know, sinus wave thing with the, you know, key terms. The other killer slide is the spider web, because that shows very clearly how big the difference is. And it also demonstrates to those CIOs, and sometimes, of course, we'll find CIOs with low growth profiles and characteristics in high growth organizations, but it tells you you better reach out to the business, you better be a self-directed creator, and you better be, you know, a buddy-buddy in the business. And the surprises, therefore, were one, confirmation, some of this is a good thing to have, and second, you know, how big the difference is between high and low growth organizations in this role.
I have a question here on the website from a Jeff Stallman. He says, there's a chicken and egg problem here. The assumption seems to be that the behavior of CIOs helps create high growth. How do we know that the different behavior among CIOs is not a result of the business they are in rather than a cause?
That is indeed a chicken and egg question. And, you know, just like, you know, only very few people, you know, would, you know, want to say whether the chicken was there before the egg or not. We don't want to solve that question. We leave it out in the open. But we do observe that in high-growth organizations, you see these characteristics. And whether they're caused by the CIO or whether, you know, the organization allows a CIO to do that, you know, that interchange is apparently working very well. So I don't think it's that instrumental to say because CIOs do this, they create a high-growth organization, or because there's a high-growth organization, they're allowed to do that. The mere fact that is that, you know, that behavior is compliant with high growth. And but even if you wouldn't know that, if you just go to your gut, if you just go, you know, to common sense, I think people would generally agree that particularly for the IT role, particularly for the importance it has in most organizations now, it is crucial to be very, very closely tied to the business and not to be at a distance. So, but the question is well put and appreciated, but, you know, we didn't want to or try to answer that, but we do observe that there's difference. So let's learn from that. And my recommendation would be, in general, you know, let's look at the characteristics of those high-growth organizations and take that as starting points. You know, at least that's how I would challenge myself.
Our next question comes from John Jacione. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you, Peter. I had a follow-up question on the comment that you just made around the CIOs in the high-growth versus low-growth. Was there any analysis that your team did around any statistical significance with the profiles of those CIOs? In other words, did they have? Was there any other correlation present besides the fact that they were associated with high growth versus low growth organizations?
Yes, we did a lot of testing, and one of the big surprises, actually, and I could have mentioned it in the earlier question as well, was that there's surprisingly little difference between industries, between geographies, between tenure of CIOs. There's some, but on the crucial aspects, not much. So you'll find the same kind of behavioral success, if you wish, from either organization or CIO, as I argued before, independent from the fact of, you know, how long a CIO has been a CIO or which industry you're in. Of course, again, that's why we have, you know, the tuning to context thing. Every situation is unique, and I have to always think about that. But by and large, you know, these are big truths. You know, these things always work, you know, kind of thing, or almost always work. Yeah.
To order the CIO study, it's off the IBM homepage, or is there a direct site that they should go to?
If you go to www.ibm.com/voiceofthecio, you can order it right there, and it'll be mailed to you by courier mail within a day.
Right.
Out of Boulder, Colorado. Mm-hmm.
Our next question comes from Andrew Fett. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. I just had a question regarding any assumptions we can draw from the size of a company in high growth versus low growth. It seems like the newer, younger companies would be in a high growth position requiring more collaboration, where a larger, more established firm would have a different set of priorities. Were there any conclusions that came out of your study based on that?
Yes, we did look at size and growth, and you know, again, there is, believe it or not, let me describe that. We were in the Palisades facility, and we had one of those very big rooms that many of you have been in. And we had a team of seven statisticians from India work for 2 weeks. And we had, I'm not kidding, 1,000 charts on the wall. We had three fellows and seven VPs all looking at that for a whole week. And we had expected, okay, let's do industry analysis, size analysis, geography analysis. But over and over and over, you know, the results were very, very close. But the main differences came out in performance characteristics. To our surprise, it's like, wow, you know, they do different things if they're high growth versus low growth, independent of size of organization, independent of, you know, industry, independent of geography. I mean, there are variations. That's why you have 17 industry cuts. But it's not very big. And then, of course, for your point, you have to go with your own logic and specific situation. Again, I would refer to that, you know, tuning to context, where, you know, feature by feature by feature by feature, you would have to say, okay, do I as a CEO have to be, you know, more collaborative? Or because I come from the business, I have a very good business understanding, and I now need to turn my attention, even though I'm high growth, to become an inspire IT manager, because I don't know anything about that. But by the way, Pat Poole, our own CIO, who was appointed 2 months ago, did a study and survey himself as well, and he was very low on being an inspiring IT manager, which he wants to raise. So he says, I'm going to work at that. So even though we're, I would say, high growth, certainly in profits, you know, you would say, well, that's good, Pat, he says, but I still want to change that. So it depends on, you know, all these kind of personal things.
Another question came in here from David Trumbo, wondering, you may have mentioned this and I didn't catch it either. What percentage of the CIO participants were not IBM customers, and what any significant differences between IBM customers and non-customers?
We did not lock that. We know that about 20% were non-IBM customers, but we did not profile that as a difference, so we cannot tell you that.
Yeah, but another question someone had asked, and when you had listed business intelligence as one of the you know, the top tools that people were looking at, CIOs were looking at, what was included in the business intelligence and analytics? Because it seemed kind of broad to Dave.
Very good question. So you must imagine we are in a one-hour conversation, and the way we do this kind of research is we don't kind of give people a form to take off. We do a live conversation. So, but for some things, we support it with a sheet. In this case, it was a sheet with 20 things, and we just say, here are 20 things you could do. Over the next 5 years, can you identify, you know, as many of the things that you anticipate investing in substantially to enhance competitiveness of your organization? And they would pick 1, 2, 3, 5, or 10, or even 20 of these things. The terms were the way they were, and that's generally how we do our research, because we believe that most CIOs will kind of understand what we mean by business analytics. Now, I agree with you. There are many things under that, but it clearly is different from virtualization, or it's clearly different from application harmonization. And just like application harmonization is a world in itself, as is virtualization, it can go many ways. The principle of virtualization, the principle of business, you know, application harmonization, the principle of business analytics, you know, those are the same. So, but we did not then give a definition of what it is, what's included and not included. So it's what generally people believe to be in business intelligence analytics, you know, is what it is. So these terms stand on themselves. And the reason that we don't do that is, you know, the conversation would get very boring, and we would be spending a lot of time on, you know, A, giving definitions and then arguing about the definitions. So we'd rather go one abstraction level higher and say, you know, this is it, you know, are you going to invest in this or not? I do understand and appreciate that that's not perfect, but, you know, this gives us the opportunity to ask more questions, basically, in the limited time that we have with our CIOs.
And another issue that was just posted on the website was that the study didn't include the voice of the C-level executives that the CIO serves. Just wondering what the considerations were regarding that.
Yeah, that is a very often heard comment, and we may well do the next study, which we're going to do and publish in, we're going to do it prepared next year, and then we're going to do the field work in Q1 of 2011 and present it in our, you know, big year, the 100th anniversary year of 2011, in the fall of that. And that may well be dual interviews. So And we're thinking about that. So we may do a half hour with the CIO, half hour with the CFO or CEO or whatever the CIO reports to, or we may do joint interviews. But we're working that. So that will probably be part of the next edition of our next CIO study.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay. Well, Peter, this was absolutely a fabulous presentation and valuable to everybody, I'm sure, on the call. Thank you so much. And I think that's it. Thank you, Peter.
You're welcome. And final message from me, if you want to see more of our studies, just check out our website. It's easy to find, www.ibm.com/IIBV for IBM Institute for Business Value. Thank you.
Exactly. Thank you.